So today, Saturday, Experience the Big Book. This is for people listening on the podcast. What's the day? September 30th. This Saturday morning, 9 years ago, not the exact day, but 9 years ago, on this last Saturday of September, I started the first meeting down the hall. I really can't say how grateful I am to my higher power for what he's done for me. It's all a reflection of my spiritual journey with towards God. And I was thinking that probably what I said 9 years ago is so different than what I say today. I've gotten so much out of it. We talk about service being important. In the big book, it talks about working with others and carrying the message. I don't know how effectively I've carried the message, but I do know that I've stayed sober. And it's helped me a lot. I was talking to somebody before the meeting. Getting in the book, studying the book, staying in the book has been the big difference for me. And I think I can see how I've changed. And I can't begin to describe the benefits. I wrote a ninth anniversary thought on the site, and I thought it was pretty good. I don't know if anybody saw it. But on the site Experience the Big Book, I've had quite a few thoughts now, probably about 25. I'm doing one tomorrow on the God Book. And I hope that's been helpful. The other thing that's been so powerful for me is seeing, I look around the room and I can remember when a lot of people came here for the first time. And now I can see them, and they're not only staying sober, not because of me or the meeting, but they're sober. And they're helping others, and they're working with others. And I can't tell you the feeling that gives me. And today, I thought we'd finish a vision for you and finish the book for the ninth time. But we're not. The regulars are laughing because they know me. But it was too many pages, and I don't want to shortchange the information in here. And we're not in a hurry, and I want to give a lot of time to page 164. Because there's so much in it, you know. People who come to the meeting regularly have quoted that a lot. But we are at a really powerful point. I think we're on page 156. And the last two weeks, we talked about Bill and the Akron lobby. And the more I think about it, I think there are several key moments in the for AA's existence today in this room. I think one was Dr. Young with Roland Hazard. I think the other one was when Ebby came to see Bill, and Bill finally changed his mind about a higher power. And then when Bill took the steps, I think that spiritual experience he had drove him, sort of like people in Scripture who've been changed by God and then gone out and been the messenger, and he couldn't stop from working with other people. And that drove him to be in the Mayflower Lobby in 1935. And then he was going to go into the bar, I really believe it. He was there, and we read it, and it drew him because things weren't going well. Anybody recognize when things don't going well, the bar sounds like a really good idea? And but he turned away from it, and he thanked God. And I think that's where God made his move. And then the next day he met Dr. Bob. And now we're seeing what happened after Bill W. and Dr. Bob met. And it's not only important to see some of the history, but if you look at the way AA developed, what the fellowship was in the beginning, and with the spiritual principles in here, it's very, very powerful. And so it says on page 156, life was not easy for the two friends. We don't tell you when you come here that life's going to be great, but we tell you that you'll have a power to help you deal with it differently than you did before. It says plenty of difficulties presented themselves. Why? Because life's life, right? Both saw that they must keep spiritually active. So the way you handle difficulties and a not easy life is to stay spiritually active. And we're going to look at that Wednesday night when we look at the recovered promises which occur if you're in fit spiritual condition. the whole point of the steps, the program, is for the individual who comes in here is in unfit spiritual condition, separated from God, and how you get into fit spiritual condition, connected to God. But there's a warning. When you get the fit spiritual condition certificate, we all get one. It's really nice. You can put it on your wall. But there's a warning. This won't last unless you do the actions of the steps all the time. And so fit spiritual condition is conditional on where you are each moment in taking the action of the steps. I just thought of that. I hope that was good. One day they called, I was thinking when I drove here, I always ask God to direct me to try to get out of Michael's crap when I do the meeting. And then it's amazing the thoughts, and it's usually when I'm on 470 and pulling down to get onto Wanamaker, or 29th, I can't remember, Wanamaker, these thoughts will come about what we're doing. And then I'll say, gee, where'd that come from? So anyway, that's enough. I'm getting off. That's why we're not going to finish the chapter today. stop it. So they went to the nurse who's head of the local hospital, and she said, yes, we've got a corker. He's just beaten up a couple of nurses. Wow, he was a good one. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking, but he's a grand chap when he's sober, though he's been in here 8 times in the last 6 months. So they picked the right guy. He was ready and desperate. And understand he was once a well-known lawyer in town, but just now we've got him strapped down tight. Here was this prospect, all right, but by the description, none too promising. Now look at this line. The use of spiritual principles in such cases was not so well understood as it is now. And I don't know if it's so well understood now. People in the medical profession send people to AA. For two reasons. One, they don't want to deal with them anymore. And two, they think there might be something here that'll help them. But I don't think that people outside of these rooms understand exactly what happens in these rooms, the spiritual principles of the program. But people can see the results, though. So that's the difference, right? They can see the results, so they'll send someone else to AA because they'll know someone who came here. And so we're the messengers. It says, 2 days later, a future fellow of Alcoholics Anonymous stared glassily at the strangers beside his bed. Who are you fellows, and why this private room? I was always in a ward before. Said one of the visitors, we're giving you a treatment for alcoholism. There you go. This was the first treatment center. Was in the Akron Hospital, a treatment for alcoholism. That's what they had. But the treatment wasn't to go to meetings, and I'm not putting that down. But the treatment was this spiritual connection and this journey to God and how you break down ego and self-centeredness and you turn to God for power to live a spiritual life. Hopelessness was written large on the man's face as he replied, oh, but that's no use. Nothing would fix me. I'm a goner. The last 3 times I got drunk on the way home from here, I'm afraid to go out the door. I can't understand it. I think sometimes when we see new people, we can see that, and we have to remember that. Remember where they are, so we can meet them where they are and give them hope. These meetings we have are so important because it's to give us hope and also to remind us of where we came from so we continue to do the deal. He says, anybody relate to afraid to go out the door? And he couldn't understand it. He couldn't understand it. For an hour, the two friends told him about the drinking experiences. Over and over, he would say, that's me, that's me. I drink like that. And that's what the big book tries to do for about 54 pages is tell you their experience and to see if you have that experience so you can understand your powerlessness so you can take the second step. The man in the bed was told of the acute poisoning from which he suffered, how it deteriorates the body of an alcoholic and warps his mind. So the poisoning of alcohol will really damage our body, and it damages your mind. But then they talked about the mental state preceding the first drink. Now, why would they want to do that? Why would they want to talk about the mental state preceding the first drink? Why does the book spend the whole chapter on it? because it tells you about the one thing that you must accept completely, your powerlessness. You have no power not to drink again. No one in this room has power not to drink again on their own. And everybody says, well, what the hell is he talking about? Well, I don't have power of my own. On my own, I have no power, but I have power if I connect to God. And that's what I talked about, the fit spiritual condition. And the mental state preceding the first drink is pretty perplexing, isn't it? When you think about it. Yes, that's me, said the sick man, the very image. You fellows know your stuff all right, but I don't see what good it'll do. You fellows are somebody. I was once, but I'm a nobody now. From what you tell me, I know more than ever. I can't stop. So you see, here's another thing. He saw himself as a nobody, but was he really a nobody? He was a child of God. He was powerless. He had a disease. And so that's the thing I'm going to talk about tomorrow. We tell ourselves lies about ourselves and about our past and our thinking, and then we believe them. From what you tell me, I know more than ever. I can't stop. At this, both the visitors burst into a laugh. We laugh, too, at some of the things new people say, and we think they're funny, and they don't think it's that funny, and we have to remember that. But we laugh a lot here. Why? Because we can see things differently now. You know, people say, I had 7 DUIs, and we're all laughing. I mean, you know, normal people would say, gee, get them off the road. Damn little to laugh about that I could see. And then here's what they did. They spoke of their spiritual experience. So first they told him about their alcoholism. Then they told him about their spiritual experience, what it was like, then what happened. And then here's what they talked about, the course of action they carried out. Remember, it says that really what we're to talk about when we tell our story is how we establish our relationship with God. I think it's page 28. How each of us established our relationship with God. Drunkologues are great, but what we want to hear is how you established your relationship with God, because that's the point. Now, if you don't think you've done enough to establish your relationship with God today, then do more. Find somebody. Get into the book. Follow the instructions. And the course of action, so he interrupted them. I used to be strong for the church. You see, he's already starting to figure he can't do this. And the spiritual experience, the other thing I wrote here, is the result of the course of action they carried out. And I think sometimes we don't connect that. It seems so simple, but we don't connect the dots. The spiritual experience is the result of your course of action. It's the result of your course of action today, whether you have a spiritual experience today or not. And if you stay in self and you don't do the things that are mentioned in the big book, you might not have a spiritual experience connected to God. You may have an experience of connected to yourself, and see how that's going for you. I've prayed to God on hangover mornings. Anybody do that? Sworn. I like the solemn oath. Sworn that I'd never touch another drop, but by 9 o'clock I'd be boiled as an owl. The thing about the swearing is that when I swore and all of you swore, we believed it. We absolutely believed it, but we were not able to carry through. And that's called powerlessness. So he said, next day he thought about it. He was more receptive. Isn't that nice of him? He's locked up. He's in that place. He's tied down, and he's going to be more receptive. You see how hard it is for us to commit, to admit defeat? And he'd been thinking over it, said, maybe you're right. Of course, they're sober. They've done this deal. He said, God ought to be able to do anything. Now, that sounds like a nice statement, doesn't it? But think about the perspective. God ought to be able to do anything. We're breaking down these barriers. It's hard for us. It sounds silly when you read it. Of course, God ought to be able to do anything. But for an alcoholic, that's the beginning of giving up on me, which is very hard. I have to work on it every day. Anybody else have to do that? We all do. He sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight this booze racket alone. Well, why? Because he was fighting it alone. And as long as we're fighting it alone, we won't have a relationship with God. So I really like the next two paragraphs are just really great. It says, on the third day, there's significance in that too. The lawyer gave his life to the care and direction of his creator. He just gave it up and said he was perfectly willing to do anything necessary. See that? He was willing to do anything. He had given up. He was defeated. And I was thinking when I was driving here that the first three steps we talk about a lot, but what they do, and it's just a thought, see if it makes any sense, is I give up completely on trying to fix out there to make me feel better. You know, you completely give on trying to change anything out there to feel better because I just couldn't do it. And so that's why you need a different relationship with God, because you can't fix out there. It's never going to happen. And anybody else try to fix out there or fix them or others, we could never do it. His wife came, and you can read in AA of Comes of Age or Dr. Bob and the Old-Timers, she talks a lot. She's in that book a lot, his wife and her observations of this. His name was Bill Dotson. And his wife came scarcely daring to be hopeful, though she thought she saw something different about him. He had begun to have a spiritual experience. And what actually Dr. Bob did with these new people was he had them get down on their knees and give their lives to God before they do anything. They would actually get down and give their lives to God. And I think at that point it really meant something, because they were so desperate and they were convinced of their hopelessness. So he's begun to have a spiritual experience. Now, how can you begin to have a spiritual experience? Just by giving your life and being willing to do anything, because you're beginning to give up on yourself. And remember, the whole process is to destroy our ego and to destroy our self-centeredness. And we've given up and we're willing to consider giving it to God. We're willing to try that. We're willing to do anything, the actions. Listen to this. That afternoon, he put on his clothes and walked from the hospital a free man. He entered a political campaign, making speeches, frequenting men's gathering places of all sorts, often staying up all night. He lost the race by only a narrow margin, but he had found God, and in finding God, he had found himself. And we can talk about that line. I'm going to stop in a few little while. So we can talk about that. He had found God, and in finding God, he had found himself. And then we're going to talk about this tomorrow. In finding God, you see the person that you really are, not the person you created when you do your four step. You look at four step, you're seeing the person that was created by your self-centeredness. You're seeing how your actions, your resentments, your fears, you created that person. That really wasn't the person God created. And that's how I forgave myself. I wasn't really that person. I was that person because I was managing my life and I had to fire myself as manager. And I wrote on here, when he wrote Free Man, I wrote page 63, which is the third step prayer, freedom from the bondage of self. And that was in 1935. He never drank again. He too has become a respected and useful member of his community, has helped other men recover, a power in the church. So now there were three alcoholics. And then the next paragraph is about the devil may care guy they found. And on page 159, he has three visitors. This guy's in the hospital. And he says, the way you fellows put the spiritual stuff makes sense. I'm ready to do business. I guess the old folks were right, and so once more was added to the fellowship. So what was required to join the fellowship? Ready to do business, ready to take the steps, ready to seek the spiritual solution. Now we talk about the desire to stop drinking as a requirement for membership, but the requirement for the fellowship that they had in the beginning of AA was the connection, seeking God together, the commitment to go to any length to do this thing. And so all this time, my friend at the hotel lobby, this was Bill W., was in town with them. He was there 3 months. He now returned home, leaving behind his first acquaintance, Dr. Bob, the lawyer, and the devil may care chap. These men had found something brand new in life. What? I wrote. Peace, power, serenity. A way of life that they didn't have to drink and they could live sober. Though they knew they must help other alcoholics if they would remain sober, That motive was secondary. It was transcended or surpassed by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. I don't know about you, but when I'm working with someone else, the feelings I have, it's different than just the motive of trying to help myself. And in fact, I always feel, I never understood, I always felt good on Saturdays after I did the meeting. Didn't matter what was going on before I got here, but I always felt good when I left. And I think if you work with someone, if you're trying to carry the message, you can't help but feel better. And it's almost like the feeling you got when you drank or something. I can't explain it. You feel so good. That's the peace that you get from God by getting out of self. And it's also a lot more effective. They shared their homes, their slender resources, and gladly devoted their spare hours. So they were, and it was a different world in 1935. They were willing by day or night to place a new man in the hospital and visit him afterwards. In fact, they used to have to pay for his hospitalization. They grew in numbers, they experienced a few distressing failures, but even when they failed, they made an effort to bring the man's family into a spiritual way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. So these people who were suffering and worrying about the alcoholic in their life found the spiritual way. So I like this. At a year and 6 months, they had they had 10 people in AA in, 18 months. And so at the end of that paragraph, it says how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. And then they would gather together, it says, one night a week for a meeting to be attended by anyone or everyone interested in the spiritual way of life. So that was the requirement to attend the meetings in the beginning of AA. Was anyone interested in a spiritual way of life? In fact, in the long form of tradition, it says that the meeting should be open to all who suffer from alcoholism. So a lot of people suffer from alcoholism who aren't alcoholics. And that's the long form. Then they talk about, the next paragraph is about the Williams. They put their house, they had the meetings in their house for years. They started with the Oxford group, but then as time it became the AA meeting, but they were part of the Oxford group in the initial, but they were concerned about the bringing the message to the alcoholic and his family. In the second paragraph on page 20, it says, many a man, yet days from his hospital experience, has stepped over the threshold of that home into freedom. Look at that. So we want to make that for us today. People come in here, step over that threshold into freedom from the bondage of self. Many an alcoholic who entered there came away with an answer. So what we want to be able to do is give people an answer to their hopeless condition when they come here to the meetings. There was a gay crowd inside, different than the gay crowd in the bar. Impressed by those who visited him at the hospital, he capitulated entirely. I think that means surrender, complete, unconditional surrender. When later in the upper room of this house, he heard the story of some man whose experience closely tallied with his own. So what they did was they took him up to the third step room in Dr. Bob's house. I've actually been there. But in Henry Williams, they had a third step room. So the people would all watch the new guy come in, and then they'd take him upstairs, and then they wanted to see what happened up there. You know, the wives, there were a lot of people came, they weren't all alcoholics. The expression on the faces of women, that indefinable something in the eyes of the men, the stimulating electrical atmosphere of the place conspired to let him know that here was haven at last. That's what it was for these people. They had a place, they had a haven. And they took him up to the third step. And then I'll finish with this next paragraph. The very practical approach to his problems. So they brought his problems there. And his problems was his self-centeredness, his separation from God. He couldn't stop drinking. He couldn't live sober. And they had a practical approach to that. And here's what we should do. And I don't always do it, but we should try. Absence of intolerance of any kind. No one here is ever intolerant in an AA meeting, are they? Good. Yeah, you're probably all sick of me by now. Absence of intolerance of any kind. Informality, genuine democracy, this is what we should have. The uncanny understanding which these people had was irresistible. He and his wife, that's the wife who usually come with him, would leave elated by the thought of what they could do now. So they went there, and when they left, they're thinking of what they could do for some stricken acquaintance in his family. So they're already thinking about getting outside of themselves. They knew they had a host of new friends. It seemed they had known these strangers always. They had seen miracles. We talk about that all the time. And one was to come to them. And then I like this line. I'll end with this. They had envisioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful creator. Now, what I wrote down here, and it ties with page 164, which we'll talk about next time, is what they found in the fellowship I wrote was the fellowship of the Spirit. These people were in fellowship of the Spirit, not in the spirit of the fellowship. There's nothing wrong with the spirit of the fellowship, but we want people to stay in the fellowship of the Spirit because that's where God is. So I'll stop with that, and then we'll finish the next time. Next Saturday, I have something going on in the morning. I'm sorry I can't be here, but the following week we'll finish, and we'll go through page 164, which I find is really such a powerful. It's a call to arms, I think, page 164. So we'll close with that, and we'll open it up.